Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Welcome to the OC Bitches ad-free on Amazon Music.
Download the Amazon Music app today.
Bye, bitches.
Hello, Bilson.
Hello, Melinda. How are you?
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We're doing one more here.
I know. Just when you thought it was over.
Just when we had an epic two-parter. Well, two episodes. One with Mr. Schwartz, one with Mr. McKenzie.
Mm.
And But we couldn't leave him hanging, right?
No.
We could not leave him hanging.
I can't believe we did it. I watched the whole series.
Rach, but how do you feel?
I feel like now that we've watched the whole series, all I can remember is the fourth season because that's what we just watched. So if I start all over again, it'll be like new.
You know what? I kind of agree with you. I have noticed that I tend to focus on what we're working on in the moment. Mm-hmm. And I can, so I'm actually really excited to go back over the top moments of this epic season. One of my favorite because of, you know, so many different things. But you know what? To do this with us, we couldn't do it alone.
We could not do it alone. It does not work.
No. So we decided to bring back our favorite OC experts, Ryan Haley and Michael Gravano from the OC Disorder podcast and superhero show to break down the best moments of season four. Welcome back, Ryan and Mike.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah.
We're so happy to have you because you know the show better than me.
Well, this is the one episode that I don't do a lot of prep for because you guys pick the moments and you know better than we do. How do you guys feel about the overall season four? What was your take on it?
From Peaches to Pancakes, the season four story. I think season four should have gotten watched a lot more, should have had way higher ratings. But it wasn't that hard to come up with the iconic moments. You know, there is still a lot that's talked about from this season.
It's delightful. After season three is grim. And for them to be like, you know, we'll have a few episodes of that in the beginning because people have to get over it. And like, what if we were just a fun sitcom that was just longer? And I thought it was a blast and a half.
The big changes that they made in season three was to up the melodrama and just drama. And they replaced all of that with sitcom beats in season four. And it worked amazing. Like, for instance, they figured out a way to get four single women living in the same house. That's the Golden Girls. That's Summer and Anna's favorite show. And we had that in here. Although the matriarch of the house, Mindy, that was you. You were more of the Blanche, I would say, than any of the four. But it was just kind of we needed a laugh track in some of these episodes, I think.
Well, I think you make a good point because I think the audience that was so invested in Marissa and when she died, obviously it was so painful that they couldn't go back. Like they couldn't see how much fun the writers were having or that it had a uniqueness that was meant to be shared and loved because it was too painful. And I wonder if that's actually, I just made that, you know, observation right now. Because yeah, I think it was painful for a lot of people from what I've read online.
Yeah. You see the season split up, too, with the first three episodes, basically Volchek leaving. That's a different season. That's like the end of season three. And then the rest is season four, which is just big and fun.
It was definitely big and fun.
Rachel was just like shocked at each episode. We'd come into the studio and she was like, I don't know what show I'm watching.
I'm like, what am I watching? I don't understand what this is, but I like it.
Yeah, by the time Julie and Caitlin are in the ice cream shop trapped, they think floating into the sea with the ice cream kid and just singing. I'm like, this is not the show. It wasn't season one, but I love it.
Handcuffed to each other. You know, like there's fortune tellers that accurately predict the fortune. There was the only thing this season was missing was like somebody giving birth in an elevator. That's the only like sitcom-y thing we missed.
Well, we did have birth in a stranger's house.
That's true. So
that's true.
Checked them all off.
Right. You know what? You're right. The more I think about it, that end really had very, very definite sitcom tropes and vibes. I think.
And it, like, in the finale, we get two weddings, right? So it's double Shakespearean comedy ending. The letting you know, like, this show fully is a comedy by the end of it.
Yes. I always thought that there was something very Shakespearean about this entire production and journey from behind the scenes and in front of the scenes. And totally.
I agree.
We agree. And we're going to go through season 4. I can't wait to see what has been selected as the top moments.
Well, we're going to go through, Did you rank them, or are we just going to go through from the top, from the beginning of the season to the end of the season?
Yeah, they're in chronological.
They're chronological.
So okay. No feelings are hurt.
Okay. Yeah, like mine, because I would be last, I'm sure.
You show up this time.
I actually show up. Well, that's that's a start. At least I'm in it.
Well, why don't you guys start us off then?
Yeah, I think that this is something that we talked about the last time we were on, which is how Stranger Things stole your guys' mojo. They thought that they made Running Up That Hill like super famous, but it was actually a cover by Placebo in the first episode of this season with, I think, what has got to be the most iconic idea from season 4, which is Ryan Atwood cage fighter.
Yes. This was one of the most impactful moments for me personally, watching it. And it was so eerie and strong and like, what is going on? Because we're 6 months later after this. I mean, I would have just tuned in, even if I was so angry that Marissa died, I would have just tuned in to see what that first episode was like.
Mm-hmm. And no one would have predicted cage fighting.
Nobody. And something so, so cool and dark is, I feel like until the rest of season 4, the happiest smile you ever see on Ryan Atwood is after he's gotten the living crap beaten out of him and he's like bloody on the ground and he like looks truly weightless and you're like, oh, this kid's going through it so bad.
I wish I could have seen the first episode in one of those 4D theaters. So when he gets punched, you can feel the blood and the sweat. Go onto your face.
Well, and also the theaters that now your seats shake so that you have that whoa, whoa, whoa,
you guys,
sound and then the seat shaking.
Let me pitch this. On the Universal Studios tram ride,
yes,
one of the experiences is the cage fight. Just
that would
it out
be pretty
there.
Rad. Yeah.
I think it's perfect.
Thanks. We just went now, there. That's why it's on my mind.
So that whole opening shows so many different things, because by the end of it, you know, it starts with, you know, Sandy's trying to look for him and, you know, they show all those people in the bar. And I love how they show the lonely woman at the bar, you know, with the blonde hair, just to kind of paint the scene of where he's living, which we don't, you know is, or we know is a utility closet or something. And by the end of it, he's meeting up with Julie at the Mermaid Inn. So I think that's one of the best openings of the entire series.
It definitely hit the ground of like, what are the two of them doing in their grief together? Like, how Shakespearean and disgusting could it be? But thankfully, she's just hiring a teenager to go kill another teenager.
Is this how is this how podcasts work? Are we just going to call everything Shakespearean?
Yeah. Okay.
No matter what happens, it's like, oh, that's got to be Shakespearean.
That's pretty Shakespearean.
What was J.J. Philbin's word for like the gasp moment?
Joints.
Yeah. That mermaid in thing is the first high joints moment of the season for sure.
Oh, right. Oh, that's true. Well, let's go on to the next one. What's the next one going to be?
Hey. Where's my dad?
Gone.
Caitlin?
Gone.
This is, Summer and Julie. Summer, you're here. See, you can't get mad at us. At Thanksgiving dinner. And I really feel like this is the scene that cements the strongest and most interesting relationship throughout the rest of the season. And not just because the two of you are the hosts of this show that we're talking to right now. Okay. But in like thinking about like a best friend who's lost her high school best friend, a mom who's lost her daughter, it makes so much sense that before you were like in each other's world, but maybe just sniping at each other. And now for like, be like, oh, you're my surrogate. And it's so clear both of these characters needed that in their life. So it's just really heartwarming.
When Summer takes off and leaves, and she says, and Julie's finally made this dinner that she's been trying to figure out all the cold turkey, so to speak, like there's a cold turkey. And then she has to cut herself off from Volchek cold turkey when she finds out, you know. And so when they have that scene, and it is true, Rachel, that that's the first time Summer and Julie have really come together. And she says, we can't go on like this, can we?
Right.
She's like, no, can't do it.
Yeah. I love all of the things with Julie and Summer because they both, you know, are really sharing that grief and mourning. And I'm actually kind of shocked that you guys picked a very sentimental scene.
Well, we're softies. And just to be clear, like, if this was Welcome to the OC Bitches, hosted by Daryl and Dr. Neil Roberts, we still would have picked this one. This is not just because you two are on it. But I think this is an important moment, too, because in the first episode, The Avengers, we're juxtaposing Julie and Ryan's grief. And it feels like Summer is pushing everything. We don't even like attach Marissa to Summer because she's got a new life. She's got, you know, new friends and everything. It's not until this Thanksgiving dinner that we see that, no, she's just as fucked up as Julie and Ryan is. She's just handling it in a different way. And it all sort of collides at this meal, which is with the two of them saying, like, we have to stop this, right? Like, we can't keep going on like this.
Right.
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 No, so when she walks up and she says that, tell me, I mean, when she finally says, I'm sorry to Sandy, and he's like, I don't think you've ever, he lets it go pretty easily, but, you know, tell me about her. And it was just a really unique way to bring them together. As Josh said, yes, Summer, Julie, and Ryan are all in these first three episodes are just dealing intensely with this grief and how to move on.
Right.
The answer for how to move on, and this is something that Ryan and Julie and Summer couldn't figure out, is, here we go, together. And so that's why they had to have all these moments, you know. That's why Brian was, you know, that's the first time he smiles outside of getting punched, is when, you know, Julie asked him, you know, tell me about her. And of course, in true Atwood fashion, he's like, oh, she was so hot. But
it's so hot. That felt like, so like Ryan was like, oh wait, I'm 15 again, seeing her for the first time. Like, yeah. he reverted. I don't know if it's a good idea to tell a parent how hot you thought their kid was.
Yeah,
but it's Julie. It's Julie,
yeah, that's
though.
That's true. She's like, she'll get it. She thought
Julie's,
she was hot.
Like, I'm proud of my hot daughter. Yeah. Yeah.
Julie smiles. Was it weird when Julie was like, what was she like? And Ryan was like, whatever she wanted to be.
Right. Oh, no, I mean, I found that it was Julie, or Rachel and I found that the whole thing was really personally upsetting. To watch all of this. So we
I'm an emotional viewer.
You are.
I am.
Yeah.
I know. True. And then the Marissa death stuff really gets to you. So did this, watching you guys grieve, did that back out?
You know what? That brings us to the next thing on your list, which is Summer's stages of grief.
Grief often comes in five stages.
Yeah, but I haven't really been grieving. Why is this happening? Life is so unfair.
Thank God you put this on there, guys, because I would have had issues. I would have had things to take up with you. But I, unlike my emotional viewing past, I enjoyed this bit.
It's hard not to. And this feels like when it's transitioning, right, is into like the goofier realm, is, yes, they are dealing with heavy stuff, and they will throughout the rest of the season. Like, the earthquake is a heavier moment, but we're going to deal with it in kind of a goofy way. And watching, I have to assume this was a fun few days on set, Rachel, just going nuts in every possible way.
Oh yeah. Like, I actually do remember shooting this, and I talked about that. I know, that in itself is a huge moment. And it was so much fun because you really got to play around. Yes, it's grief, but the way it was handled and written and directed and all of it was so much fun. And it's still like one of my most favorite things from the entire series that I got to do.
I think we've discussed this, that the way it was shot edited and the music let the audience know that she's going to be okay mm-hmm. and that this is still entertainment. Mm. But like you said, yes, it's grief, but there's comedy with grief. I mean, I can always find comedy with something tragic as well.
But see, that's what the first couple of episodes of the season buys you, is you guys handled the dark stuff appropriately. And now you get to goof around a little bit more. You know,
a lot yes. more,
a lot more.
We
yeah.
have a naked Che singing. I mean, let's just be honest here. There's a lot of goofing around.
And I assume that was just Pratt showed up without clothes and you guys went, well, roll with it.
Yeah, that's how he showed up every day. So they're like, let's write this in. For sure.
It's the most Shakespearean yeah. way you can show up.
Is there any nudity in any Shakespeare? In all of the plays?
Just the versions probably I watch.
Not. I have not seen all of
it. It depends on that production.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's been done. I'm sure it's been done.
Did Shakespeare write hair?
Where are you in your mental health journey? No matter where you are, talking to a therapist who is trained to help can make a huge difference. They can help you find a new outlook on life and help you recover your energy, confidence, and joy. At Talkspace, you can find the right therapist with the right training for you.
Talkspace is a new, more convenient way to find a therapist and meet with them. Everything is done online. You find the therapist you feel closest to. You meet virtually, wherever you're most comfortable on your schedule. So there's no missed work or scheduling childcare for an appointment. It's therapy designed for your life.
Talkspace is private, secure, affordable, and your Talkspace therapist is always accessible to you. When you've met your therapy goals or simply want to cancel, Talkspace has a simple cancellation process and will work with you to get a prorated refund for unused time, if applicable. Talkspace is there for you to make your life better.
To celebrate May Mental Health Awareness Month and to celebrate every step you take towards a better, richer, fuller life, Talkspace is offering every listener of this podcast $100 off your first month with Talkspace. Just go to Talkspace.com/OC. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com/OC to get $100 off your first month and to show your support for the show. That's Talkspace.com/OC.
We have the next one.
I guess you're headed on home now too, huh?
Are you kidding? I put the room on the company card. I've got a mud bath in the morning.
So since I ruined dinner, how about breakfast?
Breakfast? Okay.
So, should I call you or nudge you? Bang. That was funny.
From the Sleeping Beauty, we had such a wonderful character in Gary Grubbs bringing Bullet to life. The Bullet.
It is like the one smooth line he comes up with.
I mean, should I call you or nudge you? Come on. You got it. Like, that's Tom Selleck level, people.
Apparently, he says that Tom Selleck and Beau Bridges were up for the role.
Is that true about Tom Selleck?
We don't. Josh is like, there's no way we would have had Tom Selleck auditioning for Bullet.
Well, we don't think that Tom Selleck would have ever auditioned.
Well, Tom, if you could send it a tape, maybe we'll consider it.
According to Gary Grubbs, when he auditioned, they were standing in the room.
Okay.
But maybe they were there for something else.
What do you think it would have been like if Tom Selleck played Bullet or if Beau Bridges played Bullet?
Luckily, I have perfect impressions of both. So here you go.
Let's hear them. Go.
I'm Tom Selleck.
I think
you're like, bang, bang.
I think Beau Bridges would have had different but similar energy.
Yeah.
But Tom Selleck would have been, you know, kind of.
So Tom Selleck would have been taking down many of the women.
Yeah, I feel like it's a little too sexy, a little too dangerous.
Oh, man.
Although he was on Friends.
That's what I know him most from.
Yep.
Is Richard on Friends.
Richard.
You know, and he did handle, I mean, Magna P.I. had a certain amount. It had its own version of comedy. So did
it? I never watched it, but.
You were on the
I was definitely
side,
on board with Monica and Richard. So like.
Monica also dated Jon Favreau. So.
That's true. He did take, but he took her to Rome on her first date. I mean,
yeah, he's rich.
And he's a cage fighter.
And he's a cage fighter! Full fucking circle.
I think if Tom Selleck had been Bullet, we'd see Ryan and Seth with little mustaches trying to mimic him.
And Seth couldn't grow one.
Just draws it in.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Even after he's like completely made an ass of himself, that nudge means, can I come to your room?
That means you,
right?
You're
that means
done.
That you slept yeah. over.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
You
yeah.
did the thing.
The energy he gives the character, because he does, especially early on, say some despicable things. I'm pretty sure in that scene he talks before Sandy and Kirsten leave, he talks about yeah. Jews controlling the media. But he is closer to like a cartoon Yosemite Sam type. And so you're not like, oh, you're one of the most evil men alive. And
right.
it's a hard needle to thread. It's pretty impressive.
Right. We discussed that with Gary, that somehow, even though he said so many things
offensive
that even in that day was inappropriate.
Yeah.
Were inappropriate. And then somehow he did it and it was endearing. And actually, I noticed that so many of my reactions were real. That wasn't me acting. You know, there's a lot of like eye rolling and like, okay, because he did bring that real energy to set. And there was a couple times where Kelly was like, oh God, because you
I
know,
get a little nervous watching
it.
The scenes as if somebody said, watch these scenes and said, whoa, I can act like that and run for president and win. I'm going to do that. But it's scary that like the charm is clearly coming through, you know, and the cartooniness, like not cartooniness, but the sitcominess of it all, like Gary's helping the show reach that level, or the show's helping Gary, but they're working hand in hand. I would have preferred that after he said stuff, he took out 2 six shooters and shot him in the air, but he did. He doesn't need my notes. He's a professional.
That happens in between the scenes, and you know that by the time we meet 13 of his sons all in cowboy hats. You're like, oh, they do shoot up in the sky to celebrate everything.
We asked Josh about that. We were like, how? He said the end episode was definitely a collaboration of all of the writers, that it wasn't just Josh, but it was like, who came up with all these people? He's like, I don't know who came up with, I think that's what he said, Rachel, that he didn't know who came up with that many sons.
No, but yeah, we think it was clever. JJ and John, JJ Philbin yeah. and John Stevens, we're putting it on them.
Yeah, John, JJ and John, you can tell from their energy when we interviewed them that
they were having so much fun.
Having so much fun, and they just make each other belly laugh. And a lot of what goes on behind the screen, behind in the writer's room, ended up on screen this season.
Well, that makes sense. It has to be so freeing to be like, it sucks that we're like, oh, we're getting canceled. To be like, well, now we can do anything and it does not matter anymore.
Right.
It's very apparent in this season.
Right.
Yeah. There's a few times Seth almost looks at the camera and just talks about what's going on.
Like, oh, yeah.
There's the line of like, oh, if you woke up sounding like me, we would have like done a few more
usually
years.
When they say
switch.
Stuff like that, it refers to something else in the world. But he just straight up says, we could have gotten another season out of this.
Yes.
Yes.
We could have gotten 2 more years out of it. And Stephanie told us she wrote that specifically for that meta was right there. They were all very, very deliberate. Okay, so moving on.
Number 5, from the Summer Bummer. Ryan fantasizes about Taylor music video style.
Okay, I want to know your guys' take on this when you first saw it.
Mike, your appropriate take, please.
No, inappropriate.
I was watching this alone and just full on guffaws and belly laughs. It was so unexpected. And I love the character of Taylor, especially how she's grown from Mean Girl into what she becomes, also fully helping this become a sitcom. And like Autumn looks like she's having so much fun. And also like everybody in this world thinks Ryan is so cool, but he was a dirtbag kid from Chino. Of course he'd be into 80s lame hair metal. And so this is his fantasy. This is the peak is like a Scorpion video style.
For people who grew up outside of SoCal, which is what we call Southern California because we're trying to save time. People who grew up in Chino or Riverside, just like our representative Riverside person on our show, Cassie Davis, what up, the 909. Nirvana never came to them. Like there was no Nirvana. There was no hip hop. It turned 1988 in Chino and Riverside and it stayed there forever. So,
oh my God.
This is the most accurate depiction of Atwood, is that the newest music he knows is 15 years younger than him.
One of my favorite things is when he admits to Seth what he's seen, which is this Tawny Katane, you know, fame type you know, fantasy. And Seth calls it pedestrian. And he goes, yeah, but it's still hot. And Seth admits, right. He's like, they don't call them classics for nothing. They're so clever. Yeah. I love it.
But actually, Josh cleared up that the reason that they wrote this for Autumn was because she recently had done, at the time, like a Maxim type magazine spread.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. And so he was like,
did. I can verify that.
Yes. Herp. They were inspired. Someone was inspired.
Right. But those were the days where every young female actress was expected to do Maxim or FHM, and we've all done it. All did it. And,
that's right. Yeah. That's right. You get ranked in Maxim, the top 100. I mean, it was a thing.
At least you were ranked.
Oh! I don't even know.
I was over the hill.
Yes. Okay. Next.
Joinks.
One of my two top favorite episodes of the whole thing, which is the Chrismic. I love to say that. Wait, Mike, had you not seen season 4 before?
I had not.
Oh my gosh. Well, I want to know what you guys think about this episode. Take it away.
It's so funny that at the same time the show is going more sitcom, it's also leaning more into like daytime soap opera tropes. And to have this, like, we are in the same shared fantasy world because we both fell on our heads, feels, but to, instead of going like melodramatic tropes, but goofier takes on it. And yeah, it was super surprising and incredibly delightful.
And it was so fun to play. I think that's why I like it, because it was such a, you know, a departure from what we'd been doing for all those seasons, for the first three seasons.
If Atwood had never showed up to the OC, everybody would be a shell of a human being who has never arced or had any sort of character moments in their lives.
But that is, I mean, that's how you think of TV shows though, right? It's like that Ryan was the first character, like sort of bringing us through. And the other characters don't exist without him in our lives. So like, we need to watch him. It also speaks to like, the lore the show had created. Mm-hmm,
right.
You can't do an episode like this where you flip everything on its head unless you have already well established with culture what your real world is. You know, otherwise there's nothing to turn over. I was disappointed that nobody was just the same but with a mustache.
Right.
Like, why wasn't there an evil person with a mustache? But
I mean, I think the fact that JJ and John said that it started, I was like, how did the characters get there? Like, what was your thinking? And they said, all we could think was, how did Julie get with Sandy? And then we went from there. And I'm like, whoa, I would have thought that would have been the last thing. But they thought that was the most far, you know.
The most different.
Most different.
It's outlandish. So interesting. It is very outlandish. But it's also like, if you watch the whole show and you're weirdly invested in it like we all are, Julie and Sandy have gotten closer. Because Atwood's around. They started off way more at odds and at each other's throats. And so I'll watch this version of the show. I say, bring back the whole cast. Start it from the beginning.
What if Atwood
ever showed up?
Well, the Kirsten Jimmy thing, when, you know, she kept, you know, leaning towards him, and something there happened because she kind of fell back into her Ice Queen ways, and she went off that's my theory, that she went off with Jimmy, and Sandy was so like, I don't know, it's almost like payback, or they just, and they find out that it was just a marriage of convenience,
right?
Because Julie helped him, or they were able to figure out things. And also they're resentful of their exes for probably getting together.
Nothing. No marriage is better than a spite marriage.
There's one thing I wanted to address is that in the episode where you guys covered this, you talked about how Che was actually supposed to be Luke.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that does not bode well for even this version of Summer. Basically, Luke cheated on Marissa, drove Marissa to kill herself, and then Summer's just like, fuck it, I'll marry him then. Like, that's not a good look.
You're so right.
Oh my gosh.
The blood joints.
Oh, give me. Oh, daddy like, I'm a bad kitten.
Oh my gosh, Mindy and the spanking.
This is just, it was like so above and beyond anything, like, it was very extreme. What did you think, Mike, when you heard that?
I was like, really? How are they going to do this? And then I definitely, the eight steps ahead was like, I don't know if they'd bring Misha back for this like doodaloo episode. So I bet it's going to be a case of mistaken identity. And I was correct because I'm obsessed with TV and I know how TV works.
Right.
Well, I was in the show and I was like, oh my God, Marissa's alive.
Yeah. I mean, they did a really good job of making it seem like that. And I think they used this to promote.
I bet it pissed people off if they expected it to be back and wasn't.
I was mad. Personally, I was not happy.
Did you throw something at the TV?
Yeah, I was crying.
It's also interesting because like everybody, you know, is like the worst version of themselves.
But Caitlin is the
Caitlin
best.
Caitlin seems pretty okay.
I know. It's like, how did she go from the rebellious teenager to graduating?
Early and
it was like so. Right. Ryan being around somehow made her become rebellious,
or she like
in the real
I
world.
I could see if my sibling had died when I was a little kid, I would have had a better life. So maybe that's just what happened with her.
Okay. You got to stop calling him and telling him that, Ryan.
No, I'm just texting now.
Okay, good.
All right, come on, put this on.
No, I hate my life.
Yeah, no wonder Summer doesn't like you.
See? Even you think so. And no offense, but it's kind of weird you having such a vested interest in my love life considering I just met you this morning.
I hate my life. I feel like Adam was saying that in the moment.
Yes.
And unless I fix things here, which means getting your parents and you and Summer together, I can't go home. I always knew this would happen. Doesn't surprise me. Put this on. Okay. Now I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to know to woo Summer. Have you ever heard of a show called The Valley?
His impression of 15-year-old Seth is great.
And 35-year-old Mike.
I still love that Seth, when he says that I'm from a different parallel world or whatever, where this is what the reality is, and he accepts it instantly. And in both sides of both worlds, you know, Seth is like, this is, you know, they're in a parallel world. He's got to fix it.
Hi!
Come kiss, kiss, mwah,
mwah. Oh, my God.
Let me see the hardware.
What?
You mean this whole thing?
Oh, my God.
4K.
Oh, my God. It's so pretty.
Can I get a ice baby?
Ding, 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 ding. Ice baby.
So, Rachel, was it fun to finally not act and just be who you really are on
screen? I finally felt seen. So I was really excited that I got to express my inner self.
And I
very, very happy.
I believe this was a time where you had to wear jumpsuits and there had to be a word on your butt, right?
There had to be a word.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Juicy.
Junk in the trunk.
Did you enjoy playing earlier Summer or season 4 Summer? Do you have any memory of that?
I mean, it was definitely fun. Early Summer was like someone I modeled from high school, and that was just a character. So that was kind of fun to do. And then fourth season Summer was more, it was closer to myself.
Yeah.
So it was more fun to just be a bitch, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. It is fun. Always want to play the villain, not the victim.
Oh, yes.
Hey, Chester.
What's up, Mrs. Mm-hmm,
that's me. Okay, wait a second. I thought you said she was marrying Seth. That's Che, or Chester, I guess, in alt reality.
What is he doing here? I thought he goes to Brown.
Okay. What if 3 years ago his family had planned to move here, but you did instead taking the last spot at Harbor? So, without quality education for their child, his family moves to Connecticut. But
nobody has ever more openly stared at strangers than the two of them in this scene.
Chris Pratt is so good, though.
Oh, my God. We say bitch a lot in this episode.
And then you guys see each other again on the other side of the trophies.
They're so excited.
Hey, bitch!
Hey, bitch!
That's my bitch!
Well, there you go. That was one of the, that's the Chris Muck. And I forgot that you hadn't seen the season, Mike.
It's, my wife was asking me about it as I was watching it. She's like, who the fuck watches the first two episodes of something over and over, or seasons of something over and over again, and doesn't move on? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what was wrong with me. And I loved it. I loved this experience.
Oh, you didn't? Hey, you hadn't seen season 3 either?
No, until we did season 3 for this. Yeah, I'm a weirdo, admittedly.
No, you didn't want to see Marissa die, obviously.
I did not want to see, but I did want to see cage fighting. So it's like a real push me pull me situation.
I mean, now that you've seen it all, do you have a favorite season?
I mean, recency bias is I found season four so delightful. And it blew me away how entertaining it was. But I think season two is probably when the show is firing on all cylinders for me.
Oh.
Yes.
I don't season remember. Two.
Okay, let's move on to...
My Two Dads.
The My Two Dads.
Frank, you got something you want to say?
No, nothing.
What's the matter? Then I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
I'm not going anywhere.
This is my house.
And he's my son.
Not anymore. I've extended you every courtesy. I'm going to have to show you the door.
Hey, don't touch me.
Oh, come on, let's go.
Or what? You don't want to hit me. Oh, yes, I do.
This is, I love this scene. I just, there was something, I was so impressed with how they did it. But I, when Sandy goes, I'm right here, Frank. Like, it, yeah. You could, all the rage. Like, I felt like the liberal Peter Gallagher was going after the Republican Kevin Sorbo.
I was going to say, you just wanted to see Kevin Sorbo get punched.
Who doesn't?
No, he was a perfect gentleman and a very professional man. But I don't know. There was something in there that I really appreciate actors committing, man. And Peter committed. It was good.
Yeah, we all liked when that punch landed.
I stood up and cheered for sure. I did want to ask you guys, with Kevin on the set, Kevin famously anti-science, anti-vax, was he confused by like the cameras and how they worked? Like, was he nervous they would steal his soul or anything? Did he ask questions like that?
It was a different time. It was nothing like
just wondering.
That. Yeah, but yeah. No.
What I loved about it is we've heard throughout the show the Bronx past and that he used to be a rough and tumble, a lot closer to Ryan than to Seth. And right. I feel like this is the first time we see it in him. Yeah. He's like, oh, he's like the Hulk. He's always angry. He's just pushing it down at all times. And now he's just like, well, this guy hurt one of my kids even before he was one of my kids and might try to steal him back. And he could just see all of these different issues in his eyes.
I think he was channeling Hercules, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Disappointed.
I mean, him and his past, when you say it's a perfect mix of Atwood and Schmidt.
Wait, who did Kevin Sorbo play? Did I get that wrong?
Yeah, Kevin Sorbo was Hercules.
It was Hercules. Okay.
Yes.
Making sure I had the right reference. Thank you.
And then
Thank
Ryan is talking about New Girl. Peter Gallagher played Schmidt's dad
and,
on New Girl. And
yes. Yes.
Max Greenfield Sandy played Cohen. Sandy Cohen on the OC.
That's right.
That's right.
So weird. We're
Worlds
in that metal
collide.
View.
Chris McCa, huh?
My mind is...
Chris McCa?
But no, I think you make a really good point. I don't think Sandy ever hit anybody else in the whole series. You know, he wanted to hit Caleb, but Jimmy jumped in and hit him in Vegas. And I think that kind of gives you one more layer of who Sandy is when things are, he only will use that when necessary. It's there, but he has the ability to let shit roll off his back. He's a duck. But this was too much. How dare you come in? And something that Josh clarified for us, because I was, when Julie gets involved with him and she tells Ryan that, you know, he's not really a bad guy. It was my understanding that he had been abusive. And Josh said, no. AJ, the boyfriend, that's the boyfriend of Dawn when we meet them, he was abusive. Frank was just absentee and doing breaking and entering and going to jail. He doesn't think that he was ever abusive physically.
I'm pretty sure there's a line where they talk about how he was an abusive drunk in this season.
That's what I thought because it's, you know, anyway. But maybe we can, maybe y'all can let us know if that's true or not.
Y'all.
So that was super satisfying.
Let's work on some night moves.
I used to, she used me, but nobody cared. We were getting our share. Working on the night moves. Trying to lose those awkward teenage blues. Working on our night moves. And it's summertime.
So why did you pick this scene? Or this them singing this?
Well, we really wanted a Julie and Caitlin moment. This is such a perfect, you know, mother-daughter or parent-child thing of the only reason Caitlin Cooper would know all of the words to The Night Moves by Bob Seger is if her mom sang it to her constantly when she was a kid. So there's clearly, you know, it's a bonding thing and it's a way for them to get closer in this dark, dark time surrounded by somebody who may have seemed funny in 2007, but is a total sex pest creepazoid ice cream guy.
That, he's the villain of an A24 drama coming out next year.
Absolutely.
I kind of agree. The character seemed so, I was like, what, you know, and I think that Stephanie explained to us that they wanted to create this world where it wasn't, because it is so serious, but they still wanted to keep that comedy. And I thought it was very unique to have this ice cream
I
boy.
Legit think you could get away with Bullet and his lines more today than you could with this ice cream guy, with his forced his forced tongue down the throat and the line about
no consent. I liked
the singing was so cute and fun, and then him being like, I just want to be around fun hot ladies, that's fine. And that they he's all that at him. I was like, this is adorable. This is a good time. And then when you find out he's known about Caitlin forever and is semi-stalking her, that's when you're like, oh, that's less cute.
That's less, way less cute. That's creepy.
It's not an easy song to sing either. It's like in that weird range that you're almost like shouting, like, So I remember that when we were doing it, it felt really bad, but it ended up being, you know, it is true that he says, isn't that an inappropriate song to sing? And she's like, well,
with me and my mom, when I was scared as a kid, we would sing Baby Got Back by Sir Mix-a-Lot. Everybody has their song.
Wait, that's a callback to Friends. That's the only song that the baby would smile at.
We all love Friends.
It all leads back to Friends.
My daughter, CG, she's one of those people that knows every lyric, can hear every lyric and memorize every lyric. And of course, she loves Dirty Rap from when she was a young age. And I was like, what? I don't listen to it. I don't know where she's finding it.
Is her favorite like NWA or?
Something like that. Oh, yeah. No, she and Adam just loved their rap and thought it was so funny. And I'm like, anyway.
The one question I had about the scene, though, is did the ice cream kid, when he was watching you two sing, was he imagining you guys on the hoods of cars and on stripper poles? And
Probably.
It was the Taylor flashback.
Whatever the equivalent of that. It's more, he's probably more Britney Spears, like, oops, or, you know. Mm-hmm. He's thinking he's more upset. Like schoolgirl.
Schoolgirls.
Yeah. Ah, yes, naturally. So there were so many things from The Night Moves. Your next one is also from The Night Moves.
Me, on the other hand.
Well, the doctors say you're going to be fine. Although, you're going to have to wrap your head around the fact that we're really brothers now. We're blood brothers.
You donated blood?
I had an extra few pints flowing through my veins. It was no big deal.
You're not a big fan of needles.
Nor of fainting.
So a big earthquake and then classic Atwooding gets stabbed in the back by a big shard of glass and refuses to tell anybody because Atwood's got to Atwood.
It's a new term. Like,
Taylor, who's handled so much, this 19-year-old divorcee, he's like, no, she wouldn't be able to handle that. So maybe I'll just die. No, I'll get Seth. The hero I've known my whole life to say, and like it is, it's a beautiful. Seth steps up, and he keeps being like, "I don't want to step up. I probably will let you down," and ends up saving the day. And the whole build up to them becoming blood brothers, it's a fun like look back at the whole show, and it's a clip show, and get some more meta in because they're like, "Let's go through all the people you've punched in the face," and so funny, and Luke, somebody else, Luke again, And then he's like, you know what? Did you punch Johnny? No, I know a lot of people wanted you to punch Johnny, but you never did you?
Right.
It was golden. And then, very heartwarming by the time he's like, oh, negative. Gave you my blood, but you hate needles.
And I suddenly want to listen to, what does he say?
That's weird, because all of a sudden I have this strange urge to listen to Death Cab and read comic books.
For real?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, it's too bad, because if we could have turn this into a body swap comedy, we could have squeezed another year or two out of this.
Oh, Death Cab.
Death Cab.
Yeah.
That episode really set up every character being with their most important person in
OTP.
Their life.
And their OTP. It's their one true, everybody gets to be with their one true pairing in the during their
employee. I thought it was one true person. Same
one
thing.
One true person.
Yeah, and I keep saying that my takeaway is just the listing to help when you're worrying or have anxiety. I told Stephanie because she wrote it. I was like, this is my takeaway. I am now going to be listing things if I feel anxious.
Yeah,
Seth was on to something.
It's a good trick.
Right? I'll let you know how it goes.
When I try to go to sleep, I think about like putting together outfits in my closet.
Oh yeah.
Because it helps me sleep. It's like,
I've done that.
Yeah.
I just go through different types of salami.
When I'm trying to go to sleep, I list all the things that are making me anxious, and it backfires. It does not work.
I just do times tables, and I'm up to my
20s. Oh my God. No, do you guys have some bonus mentions from the Night Moves, like the montage ending?
I love the way they edited that. They did, you know, both sides of it and repeated.
And sort of let some Taylor's mom in there in the group, but like made her like go two steps back.
Kind of.
And I love that I said this before, that Caitlin was clipping Frank's hair.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is one of our directors kept saying, who was it? Patrick Norris that said he wanted his hair cut. You know, sometimes actors show up with their hair a certain way and directors don't, they're not appreciative of
They're
that.
They're not on board.
They're not on board.
Yeah, so she's cutting his hair. And then another bonus mention is when we see the Cohen house ruined.
The minute they're like, hey, look, she held up. The whole city's been destroyed, but nothing's wrong with our great house. You're like, oh, man, I did not expect the pelican to be living in their living room. But
the pelican really stole the show.
Yeah. I wanted more of that pelican's
backstory. I did, too. Yeah, the backstory.
We found out that she wanted a seagull, but that she settled for a pelican. But I think the pelican and the silence worked.
Yes. It was more eerie than a seagull. You're like, all right, I see a dozen of those every day.
It was like the Atwood side eye from the pelican.
But with the whole back half of the house knocked down, and then all you could see was just a studio audience, like looking around, like, what is happening here?
I love it. Curtain. I love it. Well, we heard that, you know, it was a less painful way to demolish the set, because when a show ends, you strike sets, and they had started doing that and they wrote it into the script. So it was because it was very emotional for everyone.
Guys, before we get to the last highlights, can I do my honorable mention here?
I'll allow it.
Yes.
Nobody talked about the episode. Well, maybe the episode, but the part where Che takes Seth and they trip out and the otter is a spirit animal. The whole relationship there, totally, you guys missed it. It's not on here. It was the weirdest episode of the season. I need some
Chris
information.
McCa, huh?
Yes. I'm going to go as far as saying yes.
I kind of agree with the scene of seeing Chris and Adam doing like this
sweat
whatever
lodge,
they were
ayahuasca
doing
vibes.
There was because it's clearly that's not like scripted in detail. It just says they and it's two actors going, okay, let's just do it. And there was something very, you know, Parks and Rec about it almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys missed it. Okay, just had to call you out.
We'll
we can
come
move
back
on.
Next time, and we'll do better.
Okay, thank but you. Wait, I appreciate that.
I know we mentioned it, but we didn't really exactly get into it. Just really quick, or maybe you could flip this. When Che was naked playing the guitar, because you guys did pick that scene, what was your reaction?
Mike, be appropriate.
It was nice seeing young Chris Pratt butt. Haven't seen that in a long time. It's more modern, like very swole butt these days. So I liked seeing that. And it was just this weird alter of like, it felt like we could get him every once in a while. And it was almost felt like, what if we have to spin off Summer? Well, now she has a sidekick. And I'm glad they never went like romantic with it. He was just like this goofy, naked, overly hippie douche.
Who turns out to be wealthy and kind of a hypocrite. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Norman told us that he was really naked and there was a lot more revealed, but then they had to edit it because
because you can't show balls on television.
What? Not even then?
Apparently not.
Network.
Not even
television.
Not on Fox. We were still getting over Nipplegate at that point.
What a time to be alive.
Yeah.
I think Ballgate would have wiped Nipplegate out. It all evens out.
Dude, Ballgate, I feel like it needs to even out. You're right. Like, where's Ballgate? Who's up for it?
The secret to getting balls on screen back then is that you had to have lyrics at the bottom of the screen and then have a bouncing ball. So if Chris Pratt's balls just bounced on the lyrics, you could have gotten away from it.
And taught you how to sing night moves?
oh boy.
Gosh. We love it. We love balls.
So we are talking about the end's not near. It's here. Oh my gosh, Rachel, really is.
I know.
Don't settle for comfortable. I got you something.
So you guys chose the Summer and Julie conversation.
Yeah, we could have done all 12 moments from this episode. Like, it's pretty jam-packed with stuff. But yeah, just putting a button on, you know, your guys' arc as basically you knew each other through Marissa before the season started or before season three. And now you are actually people in each other's lives. And yeah, just one last moment of... with this locket, you know, it's got a picture of Marissa in there. That's no dry eyes in the house.
Yeah. Nope. It really was the parallel scene to the Thanksgiving talk where that felt like the start of it. And now it's like, cause now at this point we've jumped 6 months to 3 years to six more months. Like, we are so far in the future and you can fill in all, they are so close now.
Right.
I know.
Right now. It still is one of those things where and it wasn't like a planned thing when Julie just kind of, she says, I don't, well, you're asking me advice, but here I am knocked up on my wedding day. And then she's like instantly says, the world deserves, you're a great girl. The world deserves to know you. Don't settle for comfortable. Like, so she doesn't give advice, but then all of a sudden she does. Yeah.
And she's not necessarily talking about current Seth, but it is.
Right. So heartwarming in the middle of all the goofiness of this season.
Right.
Yes.
Guys, is this number three for Summer on this list?
Who's counting?
Is that too many? Yeah. Should we take one away?
But who's counting or paying attention? Not me.
The next one you have is the wedding for Seth and Summer.
Which Summer is unfortunately part of. if I wrote it, it'd be Anna and Seth. But, you know.
Oh, no.
Click.
Wow. She's turning off the podcast right now.
I quit. You know what? I would like to see that, too. Let's see her walk down that aisle as memorable as Summer did. Okay.
Couldn't.
Because then Summer would be with Ryan then.
Oh, okay. I'm good with that. Let's swap. I'm all in.
Let's talk. Everything we used to know, ideas of strength in it we've been. It's time to cut ties, it won't ever free our mind.
Just like the graduation scene in season three, this is, you know, another, our kids have grown up. Look at them, they're just gosh darn doing it. They're going to start a life and I'm no longer worried about them.
They're just gosh darn doing it, as they say.
The kids say that, right?
And then it's all about the face that Summer makes walking down the aisle. Like, if you got to goof it up
a
little bit.
That was me, guys.
What?
So in this entire, the whole last, what? I don't know how long it is, but the entire last montage and the song, it's our last montage and it's a great one. But you get a lot in there. And as a first-time viewer, Mike, did you find yourself satisfied? Because a lot of finales sometimes leave people hanging, but this kind of wrapped it up.
Yeah, I think it's so hard to end a show, period. Because you're like, well, I've watched all these characters. Why would, just to go back to our favorite show, Friends, why would these friends all stop hanging out? That doesn't make sense because somebody just decided one day they had to. But just to leave, like, these people are still in each other's lives, but they've grown beyond the confines of Orange County, cannot hold them anymore. And this feels so natural and real. And I think so many shows do the montage thing. And this is one of the best finale montages I've seen where it didn't feel overly saccharine or too cheesy. Yeah, it hit. And having the years pass in photos of watching Summer become like an actual activist. And I don't remember. Oh, Julie graduates college. And like, and then you see her newfound family where the Bullet and Frank are there and the little kids are around now. Yeah, I think it worked really well for me.
Let me ask you guys. at the very end, and Ryan sees, you know, basically himself and the kid by the payphone. One, do you think he takes him in?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, that's done. And no, please elaborate.
I mean, this is the most effective moment of the entire season and maybe the series. And it's because, you know, season one clearly sets up this parallel between Sandy and Ryan, that Sandy is sort of sees a young Sandy in Ryan. Sandy needed to be rescued and, you know, barely made it out of the hard streets of wherever. And so now he's trying to return the favor. And the whole, all four seasons show these guys on similar paths. One is just middle-aged and one is a younger man. And then for this, the final thing that we see is for Ryan to see a kid that looks exactly like him. Maybe could have looked a little different. But, and to, like, you know, sort of put the button on this entire 4-year arc of the cycle will continue as long as we keep as long as we keep helping these people, you know, this is how the cycle continues. Yep. Right. It's pretty
what
perfect.
A hopeful and optimistic message where I think a lot of shows don't want to be that.
Some fan theories are that that's Teresa and Ryan's child.
Oh, yeah, the kid should have looked up and said, "You have, what do you mean? Do I need you to hold
yeah,
a child?"
Yeah, the kid just looks up and goes, "Daddy?"
Now he pays it forward. And I think there's something, because it could have just ended on the, they didn't actually have to have that little scene. But I think as this, you know, it just, like you said, it put a button on it that made it even more satisfying. Like each moment of that montage and then the final, "Hey kid, you need some help." And it slowly fades on Ryan's face is super satisfying. We have a nice little clip of Scott Krinsky as Daryl.
Sweet.
The fact that he ended up with the Range Rover and, like, you know, that really puts, you know, that those are, Stephanie was explaining that was really important to just show those, you know, humorous moments and people having comedy through tragedy.
And Daryl coming back throughout, that there's a great Daryl and Caitlin moment when Will's the band geek that she's starting to try to date. And then he's just like at a point like, "No, you're vapid." And then she's like, "Hey, Daryl. Hey, Ben." And they're like, "Hey, Caitlin." And so like showing their growth just to pop up. And this show is so good. Like season three is Gus, right? Is that the character's name?
Yeah.
So Gus, we have Daryl throughout all of it. And he shows up again in Night Moves. Todd Sherry is the actor. He was the caterer a few times in the Nones' house. And in my head, he has been trying to get away from this family, but they keep hiring him to work there. And now he's just like, "Leave. Why are you at my house?" It's just so fun to have it when shows pull back these same character actors over and over and over again.
Right, right. I think you make a good point of that, that there was all these, there's so many little Easter eggs, whether it's the teachers are named after Stephanie Savage or Volchok is Adam's agent, Kevin. You know, there's Easter eggs, and hopefully we did it justice and mentioned all of them, but I'm sure there's some I even missed. So I think I'm pretty thorough.
You are.
Volchok is based on Adam's agent in name only, right?
He was terrifying. He tried to fire him once, and then he chased him off the road.
what a scary agent to have. Kevin Volchok.
Kevin can be more opposite. Like if you saw, I would like to show you a picture of Kev.
He drives people onto the road.
So one more really sweet relationship that we should mention was Caitlin and Bullet. And the two of them dancing together, you know, when Julie kind of takes off is really a nice moment as well. Here's that clip.
What was that dance that you were talking to me about this afternoon? The one with the number?
That'd be the Texas two-step.
Can you show it to me?
Is the Pope Catholic? Oh, come on, lucky lady. It's your night. Here we go. Ready? And it's one, two, back step.
What's so sweet about the Will of Bullet, it softens both characters. Both are pretty rough in different ways, but watching them grow to love each other, it humanizes both of them in ways that I think came at the perfect time for the show.
Yes.
Yeah.
The vulnerability.
if you want to get that chemistry going with an actor, it's the nickname thing. Like, once he starts calling her butt, like,
it's
all done.
Yeah, like, when guys start calling me, like, shit face, I'm like, I'm yours. You know. Any nickname will do.
Just anything. As long as you do it more than
any
once.
Any old thing. I'm yours.
It really is a term of endearment, but I've also told people as they're pregnant, I'm like, make sure you're, whatever you name your child, be careful of, because everybody gets a nickname. So make sure you don't, it's not something that's going to be, you know.
But my daughter, like, I didn't think we could go wrong with Peanut McShitface, but that's, she gets made fun of a lot.
Well, I think we already mentioned Bullet Sun, right?
Yeah.
The Suns.
You mean the multiples?
San Antonio, yes. The multiples. Austin, they're just, he doesn't even know, remember them at this point. He's just like,
And Hanoi.
Oh my God, it's so good. Every city. I have a special place for Lubbock in my heart.
Bullet has so much money. How much are condoms? Honestly, how much do condoms cost, Bullet? Please, go to a 7-Eleven.
Yeah. He's probably that guy that thinks a vasectomy is demasculating. So,
For sure.
One of the wonderful things about doing this podcast is we got to meet some cool people, and you guys you jumped on when we asked you to come on, and now you're doing our last episode.
Yeah.
That's how much we love
you.
Thank you
for that. Like, thank you for all of it. Having us at the last one is bananas, and we're so appreciative. And just like, I know we say a lot of make fun of each other. Just like one of the life moments has been getting to know you guys over the last couple of years. This has been phenomenal.
Aww.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you guys. I know, a nicety? What?
Shut up, shit face.
Well, that's actually a compliment. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's been so fun. You guys are so awesome and so funny, and we have loved sharing all the moments with you guys. So thank you for being our last episode.
Of course. Before we go, I didn't know if we were nervous about you guys getting out of the podcasting game and going just back to
acting. The world
needs
you in the podcast.
Acting is for losers. So we just wanted to talk real quick about future projects.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do this. We worked with your producers. Hopefully they didn't tell you. So we have some things to share with you of what the next Mindy and Shitface project could be.
Okay. So yeah, we just think you guys have a really good thing going here. And so we had a couple of new shows to pitch for you. The first one that we think that you guys might want to try out is, of course, Welcome to the QVC, bitches, where not that you guys go on the QVC, but you guys watch episodes of the QVC and just review all of their different products.
Oh, that's my dream.
Well, do you have to try them on, or we're just doing it audio?
No. I mean, can you try on a blender?
I think you should try on a
Roomba.
You test out the products, you get real in depth between them, and is it worth the money if you're up at 3 a.m. ordering sundries?
I feel like this is my wheelhouse, you guys. You do know me. I feel seen once again.
Oh my gosh. Okay, we'll put that on the list.
Next up, we have Welcome to the Josie Bitches, a minute-by-minute rewatch podcast where you dig into every episode, half an hour to 45 minutes, you dig into a minute of the seminal and underrated movie of the early aughts, Josie and the Pussycats. It's an amazing movie.
Josie.
Look at those jumpsuits you guys are wearing.
Yeah, who's in that one? Who are those ladies? Is that like Rachel Lee Cook?
It is Rachel Lee Cook, Tara Reid, and Rosario Dawson. All very young there.
Oh, wow.
I mean, clearly our doppelgangers. We're in.
I like that. I used to watch that before that.
The cartoon, yeah.
The cartoon. So
if that's if that one's not going to work for you guys, we have something that I think the world could really use right now. It's Welcome to the JC Bitches, where you guys do an in-depth page-by-page analysis of the Bible.
And our co-host is Kevin Sorbo?
No.
Yes.
In character, though, as Summer and Julie, just talking about the Bible.
Oh, I love it. Oh, my gosh. Julie's take on
Julie
everything.
Julie sleeps with Jesus.
The sound bites coming out of Julie Cooper's
Cooper,
the GC, the two JCs.
Oh my God.
That would be classic.
Amen.
Okay.
Amen.
We're
guys.
Calling Josh and Stephanie, or we realize Ben is a writer now, so maybe he could write it.
Yeah. Get Ben in this mix.
Write the Bible.
Just write the updated Bible. Next up, we have Welcome to the CVS, Bitches, where you will dumpster dive, find people's 8-foot-long CVS receipts, and then review their purchases.
Why have they so many of those? They're coupons. They're worth money.
And so you go in, was this coupon worth it? Was it not worth it? Did I need 2 Sobeys for the price of a half of a Sobey?
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh, you have no idea. I actually have the CVS app on my phone and I'm always checking because it's something that I learned somehow during the pandemic that CVS gives you these things. And I've walked in there and it actually, you know, you can get $10, $12 off of your purchases. It's worth it, ladies.
These are all really good ideas and we won't charge you guys that much for these ideas. Our final one is Welcome to the OJ, Bitches, where you guys discuss the trial of the century, where, of course, wearing gloves. It's just something you might want to take a stab at. I don't know.
No pun intended.
I know where I was October 3rd in 1994. I was during the chase in the Bronco. I was in San Antonio doing a TV show there. But I was glued to the TV for this. Rachel?
My friend lived up the street from the condo, because I grew up in LA, and I remember us like walking by and it was like...
Your friend Cato Kalin?
Kind of creepy.
And that's why...
Yeah.
My friend Cato.
He's into surfing. And so you guys are the perfect people to really dig into the trial. And it's, you know, there's been the documentary series, the TV series, so why not the podcast series?
It sure took up a lot of our lives back then.
I'm down. Woo. I mean, I'm just going to put it out there. I'm super down.
When I saw it, because I have my computer kind of far back, and I saw OJ. I was thinking orange juice. That's how like far removed. I had to put that one to bed.
Well, the pictures of OJ's face didn't give it away.
Well, I didn't quite see because it's small on my computer. I didn't quite see it. And then all of a sudden.
I like that I'm juggling OJ's head.
Yeah, you're a very good juggler, we've learned watching through all these logos.
You know what? If nothing else, what I've gotten from this podcast is the skill in juggling. Amazing, you guys.
That is, I don't know what to say. I'm speechless.
Well, I wouldn't be speechless for too long. You have 5 new podcasts to start right there. So you better start talking soon.
Oh, right. Well, we might need a little help on a few of those. Okay. I vote for QVC.
I mean, I'm all in on OJ, so this is going to get interesting.
Oh my God.
Maybe with a little side of Jesus.
Yeah.
This has been so fun, you guys, and so awesome. And I'm ready to take them all on. And I hope you guys can recap them all with us once they're recorded.
Yeah. We're going to recap each episode of your guys' podcast.
Yes.
And for everybody listening, dreams come true. Look at this. We just watched the show a million times. Well, I did. Mike watched season 3 and 4 once. And then you get to talk about it professionally like this. So thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you.
For all.
And if you ever need a guest on one of your podcasts, I'm happy to do that as well.
I'm not.
Yeah, no, that was clear.
Well, Rachel, I think this is it. I think this is our last OC recording, but we might have some surprises coming up for you diehard bitches. Might. So stay tuned to our Instagram handles and our YouTube page for more details.
That's right. And thank you, everyone, so much for listening. Follow, rate, and review. Welcome to the OC Bitches, wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you like to watch us, check it out on YouTube.
Bye, bitches.
Bye, bitches.
Bye. Welcome to the OC Bitches is brought to you by Cast Media. Executive produced by Colin Thompson, Harris Lane, produced by Katie Curtwright.
Edited by Parker Flores and our technical engineers, Travis Holden and Dustin Park.